Hello and welcome to the Young Hustlers Podcast, episode one. I'm your host, Andrew Myers, sitting with entrepreneurial young hustler visionary Jesus. Trevor Grody.
Christ. I didn't know you were going to introduce me like that. I take it back. I want to be humble again.
All right. So, Trevor, I've known for 4 years now, has started numerous businesses, and today we're going to talk about his past businesses, his newest venture, and where he sees one of the emerging markets future. So why don't you introduce yourself, Trevor? A little backstory. What companies have you started? You can start wherever.
For sure. I always wanted to you know, start work for myself, start companies. That's why I came to Babs in the first place. Like the first like money making experience I ever had for sure was I was 13. I did like a student trip to China,
mm-hmm.
and we went to Hong Kong. And there's this place in Hong Kong called the Ladies Market, where they just sell knockoff goods and like all sorts of crazy stuff. And the Dre Beats had just come out. This is probably a bad story to introduce myself with, but I was 13 and the Dre Beats had just come out, and they had all these beats for sale for like $20. It was literally just $20. It came in the packaging. I don't know if they were like stolen or knockoffs, but they were not, you know, legitimate beats.
Yeah.
And I bought 20 of them for $400, and I took them home and told the customs agents they were birthday presents, and then I sold them for $100 each, and that's the first time I ever like actually made money. I told that story when I was trying to when I was in like an interview for being a peer consultant, and the lady was like, "Oh, so you committed fraud and like a crime?" And I was like, "No, but well,
yeah."
In retrospect, I probably shouldn't have done that. But I was 13, and you know, I really wanted.
How did you get them all back?
I just put them I had a big motherfucking suitcase. I had a massive suitcase, and I shoved them in there, and got some weird looks at the border. But I just told them they were Christmas presents. That I had a big family, and no one, you know, double checked. So, my first experience with entrepreneurship was. Probably a pretty illicit one. By
that is some straight hustling right there. So what about your first company? Was that the one that you started freshman year here?
No, I started the company in high school. A moving company. So it was a total failure. But I, basically, my mom was the landlady at a bunch of low income housing apartments in Erie, and they're always vacancies because, you know, it's Erie and there's not that many people. So we had all this like empty space, and I put up posters at the local colleges because there's like 6 colleges in Erie County. There's a shit ton of colleges, and for storage. And I was like, hey, instead of just storing it at, you know, a storage locker for a bunch of money, you buy boxes for me. So it was like 50 bucks for a medium box, like 100 bucks for a big box, and like I'll give you the boxes, you pack it up, and then I'll pick it up, store it, you know, at these apartments all summer, and then I'll come deliver it to you again in the fall. And I only got one person to sign up, I registered as like an LLC. I borrowed like $1,000 from my grandpa and just lost it all. So,
I mean, it's a learning experience, definitely.
Yeah, it was a learning experience, and there is. I mean, it was a good idea. Like, if I would have not been a shitty, lazy 13-year-old, like, I'm sure I probably could have made a bunch of money.
This was also when you were 13?
No. This was my sophomore year of high school. So I was
still young, 16, 17. Yeah. Still like hustling. And then was the next one the one freshman year, or is there another one?
Yeah, no, then freshman year I started. I've been really, really into hemp, industrial hemp, ever since I can remember, since I was like 14. And you know, I really believe in the future of that industry. And I believe in hemp. I think one of the bigger market ready applications for hemp is in food and health food. So hemp seeds are, you know, the healthiest source of plant-based protein there is. You know, they're chock full of omega-3s and omega-6s. They actually have the perfect ratio of omega-3 to omega-6.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's all sorts of good shit in there. And so I, freshman year, decided to start a hemp seed distribution company. Again, total failure. Horrible failure.
I mean, it was better than the other one, right?
It was incrementally better than the other one. I made a lot of mistakes, but we ended up getting, we had like four customers, and then it fizzled out.
Yeah. But I mean, I bought some and they were really good. I used to throw that in my yogurt all the time.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you. Yeah, most of the money we actually made was in distributing to like juice bars and stuff. But I think we made maybe like $1,000, and then shut it down. But you know, I learned a lot about like, you know, what actually starting a business with, because all the other businesses I started was just me.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I started a business with like a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely like the toughest part of like business like I've like seen so far. I mean, I'm fucking 22 and haven't made any money, but like that's the definitely like where the biggest like problems have come from in my experience, like, you know.
So what were your biggest takeaways, your biggest learning experiences through that one and maybe the other ones as well?
Don't start a business with your friends. No, that's not good advice, because I started another business with my friends. the biggest takeaway is make sure that the people you start a business with are good at things that you're not good at, and vice versa. Because when I started Jay, it was called the John Wesley Hunt Organics, J.W. Hunt Organics. We named it after John Wesley Hunt, who was the first millionaire in America west of the Appalachian Mountains. He made all his money baling hemp. He was a hemp manufacturer. That's an aside. But everyone had like the exact same skills as me. You know, they were my friends. I let too many people in. I think we had like six people. Let's see. Damn. It was myself. It was Ryan. It was David. It was Devin. It was Alex. And it was Chuck. Yeah, it was six people. And it was just, I mean, it was, I wasted a bunch of money on that too. But I learned, yeah, you gotta have people who like have complementary skill sets, and you gotta have people who are like committed to it. As I mean, no one's gonna be committed to it as much as you are, probably.
Mm-hmm.
If you're like me, but
someone with the same vision and drive, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, people have to be responsible. They have to treat it like it's, you know, it's like a job. It's not like a hobby or you know, it's not like joining radio club. So yeah, those were probably the two biggest takeaways. And then also I just learned a lot like about, you know, how to like delegate things and how to manage people and how to deal with conflict. So yeah.
I mean, all good lessons. You learn more from failure than you do from success.
I wouldn't know. I haven't succeeded yet, but I'm trying.
Well, at least that's what I've heard. I also have not succeeded yet. So now you're on to your next and newest business, correct? Nectar?
Nectar CBD Super Drink. That's what we're doing nowadays. Yeah, like I said, I've worked in the hemp industry for the past 3 years. I worked on Capitol Hill for the Hemp Industries Association, the industry group in D.C. I worked for one of the biggest food companies in the industry. And, you know, I've kind of seen CBD go from this little tiny niche thing that nobody was really talking about to where it is today, which is, you know, just exploding. They're supposed to sell $1 billion worth of CBD this year. It's crazy. We sold $200 million worth of it 2 years ago. But I'd seen it, you know, get to what it's at. And, you know, I knew that the farm bill stood a really good chance of passing this year. So I figured the timing was right to do something with CBD. And I was living in the East Village in New York. And I didn't have any money because I'm an intern. So I had the idea for a juice beverage, a friendlier, healthier option for people, you know, who are interested in CBD. Because a lot of people are still really intimidated by CBD. They don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, they think it's pot. They think it's going to get them stoned.
Yeah, and for the listeners who don't know what CBD is, would you like to just give a brief overview?
Yeah.
Because it is not pot, as I have heard many times from you.
CBD is a cannabinoid. It's one of 113 cannabinoids found in cannabis. It's found in hemp, and it's found in marijuana. And what they're finding is that a lot of the, first of all, it's not psychoactive. So CBD is not psychoactive. It's not a drug. It's not going to, you know, get you messed up. It's cannabinoid. And what they're finding is that a lot of these health benefits that are being attributed to medicinal cannabis, things like, you know, anti-anxiety effects, dealing with chronic pain, dealing with inflammation, are actually being attributed to CBD and not THC. So THC is the intoxicant, and CBD seems to be the source of a lot of the medical benefits of cannabis. So the 2018 Farm Bill legalized CBD, but that was in January. But this, I started the company way back over the summer last July. And what I did was I had the concept for this drink, and I called up my buddy Jack, who's our product designer. I pitched him on it, and I said, hey, why don't you make me up some logos, and you know, we'll run a test. We'll see if anybody wants this. We'll make up a few units. We'll try and sell it, and you know, if it does, we'll go from there. So I made 100 units. I went to this factory in Brooklyn. I bought some plastic bottles. I made 100 units just in my apartment. Again, probably not the best idea, legality wise, but you know, I just wanted to see if people wanted it. So I made 100. I met a man who owned a bunch of bodega kind of stores, smoke shops and bodegas, and he owned 20 locations, and I spent all day walking. I must have walked from like 72nd Street to fucking Battery Park. Like, I literally walked like 10 miles to these stores, and I was like, hey, you know, I'll give these to you on consignment. If they sell, you know, great. If not, I'll come back and I'll pick up whatever didn't sell. And so I spent all day walking around the city, dropping these things off, even 5 at each store. And as I'm getting back to my apartment in the East Village, I'm like putting my key in my door. He calls me. A guy's name is Johnny. He calls me, and he says, hey, we sold out. And I said, oh, great, which store? And he said, all of them. You know, so we sold 100 units in 20 totally different geographic locations with no promotion or advertising at all. And I thought, wow, people are really responding to this. You know, we might have something here. So then that was like the proof of concept that I needed to get motivated about it. And then we went and we raised some money, you know, through my contacts here at Babson, through Roberto. And, you know, we got to market in 3 months, which is something I'm pretty proud of. Hired a consultant to help us make the recipe, make sure it was shelf stable, make sure it was safe, find a co-packer, you know, handle product insurance, all that. And then we did our first test run of 500 units in December, and sold about half of them, gave out half of them to get into stores. And, you know, they've been selling really great so far. So that's where we're at. And, you know, we got high hopes that, you know, this time it might actually work. Mm-hmm. We got a good group of people. We have, you know, some serious resources behind it. And you know, we're just a bunch of young, driven, ambitious guys with something that's selling. So, you know, I'm sure we can hopefully turn it into something worthwhile.
Oh yeah, definitely. Seeing you put in the work over the past semester and how much you've been hustling.
You've been listening to too much Gary Vee. I hate hustling. I hate that word.
Well, this podcast is called Young Hustlers.
I'm sorry.
But what has been your biggest challenge so far in this venture, at least?
Personally, my biggest challenge, I mean, it's the same that it's been like every business. I think is motivation is the biggest obstacle to getting things done, because I mean nothing's really all that complicated if you break it down into a bunch of small parts. Mm-hmm. You know, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, make a product, go find someone to make it, like go find someone to manufacture it, go out and start selling it. But you know, if you can't get up in the morning and keep track of what you're doing and making sure that things that need to get done, and you know, still having energy left over to try new stuff, you know, that's pretty challenging. I think the most important thing, and the thing that's like set this business apart for me from the other business I've started, you know, in addition to the things that I've learned, is it's really effective, I find, to have frequent small successes. So, you know, you get your first sale and you're psyched as fuck. Mm-hmm. Because somebody's actually giving you money for something you made.
Yeah.
You know, and that gives you enough motivation to go out and work for a week. But then you're a week in and, you know, you haven't sold that much since, and you're getting tired and there's all this paperwork, and your motivation starts to wane. So I think that the best way to stay motivated is to, you know, like I personally, I make sure that I go out on like a few sales calls every week and then I get a few stores.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, that reminder that, you know, this thing could actually work and that, you know, the product is good, really helps me stay motivated when I'm, you know, stuck in the radio room for 3 days doing accounting.
Yeah.
That's all I would say.
That makes a lot of sense. And so when you go to these stores, because CBD, as we talked about, has a lot of misgivings and it's an up-and-coming thing, how do you get the stores to buy into your vision?
To be honest, like, every store I've been to knows what CBD is, and they're super, I mean, they have their ear on the ground, they know the trends that are coming, and CBD is like a mega trend. Mm-hmm. It's a wave for sure. So we haven't had too many problems of people being like, CBD, what is that? A lot of places already sell CBD. They sell like skincare products. We've had a few stores that, you know, we're like, can we sell this to people who aren't 18? Like, how old do you have to be to buy this? And we had to have discussions about that because we didn't even think about that. Because, you know, again, it's not a drug. It's not addictive. It's not, it's like if, you know, it's like if vitamin C were illegal, like it's just good for you.
Yeah.
But, you know, just by nature of being cannabis derived, people are still pretty skeptical of it. So we decided ultimately that we would recommend to stores that they only sell it to people 18 and above.
Mm-hmm. Is there any, like, legal thing that you could find? No?
No, there's no legal age restriction to it.
Interesting. And so now onto our last topic, one I know that you're excited about. As we already talked about, you've worked in the hemp industry, and you're currently working in the hemp CBD industry, and with the Farm Bill, as you mentioned earlier, just being passed, and hemp and marijuana just being a huge growing industry, what do you think the next, let's say, 5 years has for that industry as a whole?
Yeah, well, I'm a bit of a radical. Then, like, I think that industrial hemp is our single best, most practical solution to climate change out there. I think hemp can really fundamentally change the way a big chunk of the economy works in the U.S. You know, by nature of its versatility and its sustainability. So I think that the biggest thing hemp has to offer is going to be in construction materials. I mean, carbon negative, sustainable construction materials that are made out of the core, the woody core, and the bast fibers of the plant. There's three parts to every hemp plant. There's, well, four if you count the leaves. There's the leaves, there's the seeds. The seeds are used as health food. They could be used to make industrial oils, you know, biofuel, if you want to get real crazy with it.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the bast fibers, which go into things like textiles, construction materials, and things of that nature. And then there's, you know, the core of the plant, which is like a balsa wood kind of, you know, real soft wood chip material. And again, that also goes into things like particle board and construction materials. And there's a building material called hempcrete. Not very creative in the industry with names, I'm afraid. But that's a mixture of the core, a little bit of fiber, and lime, the chemical lime. And what it does is it replaces drywall and it replaces the Pink Panther insulation. It doesn't use any chemicals. It's just water, lime, and hemp. They make these bricks out of it. And It has the same R value as traditional insulation. It's carbon negative. So what it does is it actually sequesters carbon dioxide out of the air over the lifetime of the product. It's like building a house out of air filters, almost. And, you know, the CO2 with the water and the lime actually, it calcifies and it makes the, it's not load bearing to start, but, you know, over the lifetime of the product, it actually calcifies and solidifies and hardens and becomes load bearing. So I think, the best part about it is that it's a waste product. So, you know, right now, the hemp that's being grown for CBD, the hemp that's being grown for food, the stalks and the fibers are just sitting out in the field, you know, rotting away. There's, because the market hasn't, you know, been created yet. So I think refurbishing homes is a gigantic market in the U.S. I think green construction is going to be a gigantic market going forward, especially, you know, out west, especially as these big companies building headquarters are you know, getting more passion and more, you know, even if they're just, even if it's greenwashing, they're just showing off, you know, it's becoming the thing that everybody wants is to have the most sustainable offices. And I think hemp could be, really find a strong foothold in that market. The problems right now is that it's too expensive. And that's because we don't grow any hemp in this country. We grew less than 50,000 acres last year compared to like, we grow like 3 million acres of fucking alfalfa. Like it's sad. And the labor costs are really high because it's a brand new product. People don't really know how to use it. It's pretty labor intensive right now because nobody's figured out how to do it properly. But you know, as we do grow more hemp, as the need for sustainable building materials increases, I you know really see that as being one of the biggest market segments in the industry.
Interesting. And do you think the CBD has the same potential for growth as that? Or,
well, CBD, I mean, the projections vary. So, you know, Forbes linked to an article projecting that it was going to be worth $20 billion by 2025. Now, that's fucking insanity. I think that's optimistic by anyone's standards. But the accepted number is that it's going to be it's going to be $2 billion by 2022, $2.5 billion.
$18 billion growth is what they're projecting for 3 years.
Oh yeah. It's
ridiculous. It's
insane. People want it. I think that's going to hinge a lot on if the science catches up with, some of the claims people are making about CBD. Some people are making some irresponsible claims. They shouldn't be doing that. But I think the hope for CBD might be, I'm afraid that it might be too good to be, could be true, but you know, everything coming out right now is confirming what was assumed before. So we'll see how it goes. The ceiling to CBD's growth is pretty high. I mean, you know, it can be infused into just about any kind of food. You know, the FDA just approved Epidiolex, which is the first pharmaceutical drug derived from CBD. You know, there's all sorts of shit you can do with it. And people are extremely excited about it in the US. I think the real question to whether or not it'll live up to the hype is how it gets taken in abroad. You know, if it really catches on in Asia, or if it really catches on in Europe. It's already starting to catch on in Australia, but you know, I think those are two huge markets.
And is there any inclination that it's starting to grow in those markets?
I haven't really read anything about Asia. Although funny, I know that hemp seeds briefly were super popular in South Korea after Fukushima because people's want their omega-3s and their omega-6s, and everyone was afraid that the seafood was all going to be like radioactive.
Oh, interesting.
Like the Korea tuna and stuff. So I couldn't speak to Asia, but it's really catching on in Britain. where it's now been legalized. And actually a lot of the CBD that was coming into America before this year was coming from Eastern Europe, was coming from places like Poland and Romania. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for coming on and doing the first episode of Young Hustlers. It's been an honor to speak to you.
Thanks, buddy.